My computer's desktop gets simpler and simpler with each passing year. Nowadays, it's basically a couple different web browsers and a whole bunch of SSH terminal windows, each of them going to a variety of machines out on the internet that I am doing all of my real work at. Command line scripts to interact with the Internet Archive or upload and download items from other machines. In every way, my window into computers is turning into a series of smaller and smaller squares stacked on top of each other. Recently, however, I started experimenting with one small tweak. I've started using vintage fonts for some of these terminal windows, and to my surprise, it's been turning me nostalgic and full of emotion about times past and the potential that every letter brought to me. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If you spend all your time downloading things, especially historical and vintage software, you're going to get a lot of fonts. You're going to get them for machines long gone, but you're going to definitely get ones for machines that are still compatible with a whole variety of formats. The world got its act together pretty quickly with fonts, turning them into a product that could be sold or created by individuals and transferred into operating systems with very little effort. There are closed and open formats, but pretty much everything has been wrenched open and is compatible with most programs that function within an operating system. Video games that have their own fonts don't do too much work in hiding them, so many of them have been pulled apart and turned into system fonts that you can use day to day in your word processing, your graphics, or your terminals. For a long time, fonts have been a standard gift traded between people who deal in collecting software. There's font CDs, font collections, zip files filled with thousands of individual fonts, many of them imitating even more fonts and typefaces going back hundreds of years. There's fonts to imitate broken typewriters or famous movie logos, fonts designed to be read by the widest audience possible, and fonts so illegible, I highly doubt the creator can read them. Having a font is easy enough. Both being able to browse through your fonts, as well as deciding if you ever want to use them, is the difficult part. Some fonts have license and usage fees, but the very vast majority do not. They date back way too far, go in too many different directions, and in some cases, their ancestry couldn't be tracked if you tried. This all came to a head recently because I had installed a font pack of vintage PC fonts, fonts used by a variety of IBM PC-compatible machines throughout the 1980s, as well as a number of IBM terminals of the 70s. When my father brought me to IBM Research to play around on the 3279 terminal, I'd never seen a font like that. It was bright, beautiful, had a dot in the middle of the O that I found incredibly charming and which melted away and simply became the text by which I played adventure, messed around with poker games, and interfacing with what at the time felt like an infinite amount of data floating somewhere else, just within reach. Maybe it's just the shock of familiarity, but I loved the 3279 font as much as I loved the IBM PC's font and the Tandy font that my friend Chris and I would see on his computer when his family bought one. Fonts were and are the silent partner in communication. You may be reading the words, but the fonts are helping you along your way. They can be very intrusive. They can evoke their own message even though you're reading something saying the opposite. And sometimes, in their best mode, they are completely invisible to you, entirely silent to the process of reading. Messing around, as I was, with this pack of fonts, I started applying them to different terminal windows that I had connected to my Internet Archive workstations. And I found that the font affected how I felt about that window's capabilities. Some fonts told me this is where I did writing. Other ones were temples of calculation and communication back to me. Some of the fonts were designed for the BIOS that came up when you turned on a PC compatible, while others represented the blocky words by which you played Hunt the Wumpus, Colossal Cave, and Star Trek. One window with a vintage font is pretty fun. 20 makes it into a festival. As I started throwing in different sizes, they took on a different importance to me. 16-point, 12-point, 8-point, all indicated various levels of importance, of relevance, of need, of my attention. In some cases, all the clever bit mapping to make the fonts work meant that when you put them into Unix, they didn't quite work right with all of the terminal codes and all of the different special color settings that you could have in a modern Linux interface. But I didn't mind the smiley faces and the weird blank areas in the terminal window where there should have been some level of text graphics. That just encouraged me to take the leap, to go between the spaces, in much the same way that I always had to read between the lines of what these simple programs were trying to tell me. Before the American Standard Code for Information Interchange comes the fonts for individual companies or for telegraphs or automatic telegraph machines and teletypes, each one providing a font for what it thought was important. And it was in those early words that we started to see text-based digital art, creations that still delight and amaze when you can get them to display properly. There is no doubt to me that these fonts shaped how I perceive information and how I read words. I had a lot of books in my life, all of them using the standard fonts that one would expect from professional book publishers, with maybe a few being clever here and there with how they put out the letters. But with computers, I felt I was in control, and when fonts could be moved around, selected, it opened up a huge amount of possibilities, and ones that I loved playing with, even to the detriment of efficiency and readability. But in terms of fonts that have had the longest effect on me, that would be the font set of the Commodore PET, my first computer, which I still own. Very unique non-letter characters. Over time, we've standardized what ASCII represents and what characters do what. There's remnants from teletype days, but on the whole, it's extremely straightforward. But a few machines, especially in the early ages of the home computer era, they would use half of the character set for other non-standard characters, and these would become the hallmark of demo scene and art scene, as people would use them to draw text-based art. In terms of the Commodore PET, there were characters in there that I simply never saw again. The suits of a card, a whole host of letters and boxes and symbols. And I just accepted it. I accepted that something created this font and did it for a reason. A few weeks ago, for reasons I can't recall, I became fascinated with PETSCII, as it was called, and wondered, who made these decisions? Were they a committee, a standard, a company? Where did it come from? And here, I get a moment that I may not again. Mentioning this out loud to a number of people, someone pointed me to words said by Leonard Tramiel, the son of Jack Tramiel, who had worked extensively on the Commodore PET, and is one of the few surviving members of that team. They gave me a few citations of him mentioning the font and then asked if I wanted to be connected to him. I said yes, and within 1 hour, I was on a Facebook chat with Leonard Tremail, creator of Petscape. While I'm sure there's a whole bunch of questions I could have asked him, tonight it was about fonts, and I asked him, where had the design come from? What had driven him toward certain symbols, different drawings? And he told me, very simply, the suits of the cards had come from Chuck Peddle, who had wanted to ensure that a poker game could be played on the screen. And as for the special characters that could be used in drawings, he needed to recreate the Starship Enterprise in text. He thought this was an excellent baseline for figuring out the graphic capabilities of this character set. So he had designed it himself across a few days on graph paper and then handed it off to be put into a ROM chip that would be in every Commodore PET. With a few modifications, it became the character set of the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64, and therefore is still in use, if mostly by the demo scene, the art scene, and retro computing, to this day. I thanked him for his time, I thanked him for the influence on my past, and then I retyped everything we had discussed so I could spread it out to the most people. Whether this wins an argument or helps fill in a gap in 20 years, I don't know. But one thing I do want to make clear is that the era of early home computing, where we can still reach out on social networks and communicate with the people who made decisions back then, is rapidly, rapidly coming to a close. It's been exciting for a few decades to discover names or initials of people who had played a part in this early time, and being able to communicate with them, to thank them, to fan out, to see them enjoy and note all the contemporary descendants of work that they did a long time ago. But like a lot of things, this is a precious, unique situation that is going to fade. And the stories, the decisions, the people behind them will fade as well, leaving behind, like glyphs, cave paintings, etchings in stone, these wonderful, evocative, mysterious, and glorious fonts. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Forrest Fuqua, Emilio Oliveira, Corey Thomas, Matt Reynolds, and Ernie Hershey, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. One last bit of trivia. My boss, Brewster Kahle, named his firstborn son after his favorite font. And that is why we have Caslin Kahle.